You know, there are some things in science fiction movies we'd love to see in real life.
Steve, you're talking about like getting real lightsabers?
That could be, or a teleportation device.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
But then there are other things that you might not want to bring back.
Is that the theme song from Jurassic Park?
It is, and the show's Lauren Gilger is here to explain what this is all about. Lauren, you've got us pumped up. What is this about?
All right. So I am not about to tell you that we are going to bring back dinosaurs, but this is a story about de-extinction. It turns out scientists are closer now than ever before to bringing back extinct animals. In recent weeks, it hit the news that Harvard geneticist George Church is just years away from bringing back the woolly mammoth. But it turns out it's all a little more complicated than the headlines made it out to be. So I got a hold of science writer and author Helen Pilcher to talk more about the science of de-extinction. I reached her on Skype from her home in England, and I started by asking her to explain the basics here. First, what's the idea behind de-extinction?
So we're not talking about making lonely zoo exhibits. The idea, if this works, is to make large numbers of carefully chosen but genetically vibrant animals that you could release back into the wild, where the hope is they would have a positive effect on the environment. That's the idea behind it.
So it's not like Jurassic Park?
Well, it's not like Jurassic Park. And depending on your viewpoint, that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think if you're a lawyer, the T-Rex likes chomping on lawyers, that's probably a good thing. But if you're a dinosaur fan like me, I'd love to see a live dinosaur. But they died out too long ago. We can't get DNA, which is the starting point for de-extinction. We can't get DNA for anything much older than maybe 500,000 a million years. So to put that in context, that means that we can only really think about bringing back animals from the recent past. So the woolly mammoth is a possibility, but things that went extinct more recently, like maybe the passenger pigeon, they are possibilities.
And that's the woolly mammoth is what first sparked our interest in this topic. And so the Harvard researchers are saying that in a couple of years, they could de-extinct the woolly mammoth, but it's not exactly going to be like a living, breathing mammoth calf, right?
No, if you listen carefully to what George Church, who's the scientist behind it, has said, he said within 2 years, he hopes to create the embryo of a mammoth-elephant hybrid. So there's two distinctions here. Number one, we're not expecting a full-grown woolly mammoth, you know, or herds of them stampeding across Siberia in 2 years' time. Nor is he claiming to be able to make a bona fide, authentic woolly mammoth. None of the animals that people would be creating through de-extinction would be exactly the same. So basically, what he's doing is he's editing mammoth genes into elephant cells. So he's endowing elephants with mammoth-like characteristics. So, you know, the long, luscious locks and the huge tusks and the small ears and the sumo wrestler rolls of fat and all these characteristics that helped the woolly mammoth to survive north of the Arctic Circle. That's what he's hoping to make. So it's a cross between an elephant and a mammoth. I like to call it a mammophant or an elemorph.
And so when you're trying to bring animals back to life, you said you need DNA. Basically, explain to us how does this work?
Okay, so you need DNA. You need the genetic blueprint, the recipe for making the animal. We can go to museum specimens and we can extract DNA from those. And then we can sequence that DNA. That means we can read the sequence of chemicals that creates this recipe, reconstruct that inside a computer in digital form. And then the other ingredient we need is a close living relative. We can then take the DNA of a close living relative. So for the woolly mammoth, that's the elephant. And we can look at the differences between the two and reconstruct something like the genome of the extinct animal inside a living cell of a relative animal.
So if you had an elephant that had some of these woolly mammoth-like qualities, what would be good about that? Is this about biodiversity?
So the idea with the woolly mammoth, it's an interesting one, is that in their heyday, these animals were part of a very complicated ecosystem in Siberia. And when they went extinct, things changed. And there is a huge amount of carbon locked up in the permafrost in the areas where they used to live. And as our planet warms and the permafrost melts, all the carbon that is locked up there will gradually be released into the air and could accelerate global warming. Mm-hmm. Now, studies suggest that where there are big grazing animals, like mammoths, the soil temperatures are slightly colder. So one of the arguments people like George Church will tell you is if you can put the woolly mammoths back there, they will help keep the Arctic frozen. And because they were ecosystem engineers, they could drive the production of the habitat that used to exist at the end of the last ice age, which was a very biodiverse, rich ecosystem. For me, I don't think we'll get woolly mammoths back in time to be able to help prevent climate change. I think that's a bit of a red herring. But I do think de-extinct animals, if we choose them carefully, could have a role to play in promoting biodiversity and boosting biodiversity. And we're in the middle of this massive mess at the moment. You know, species are going extinct at a really alarming rate. And, you know, if we choose carefully which species we bring back, they could interact with their environment and boost levels of biodiversity, not just by them physically being there, but by the knock-on effects they have for other species.
But then there's the whole other side of this, which is sort of the ethical side of this. Like, should we be doing this? Do we have a moral obligation to bring species back that have been killed off? Or is this sort of like playing God?
Yeah, I mean, these kind of arguments crop up again and again. The moral argument is interesting. So extinction rates are 1,000 times higher now than they were during pre-human times. So we're driving this biodiversity loss through things like climate change, through things like poaching and habitat loss. So yeah, maybe there is a moral obligation. If we can undo some of the damage we've done, maybe we should. And in terms of playing God, well, you could say, you know, if God here is kind of this unnatural technology. You could say it was these unnatural technologies that got us into this pickle in the first place. Scientists aren't, despite the stereotype in the media, these mad scientists with crazy hair doing crazy things. They're thinking very deeply about what's happening in the world and trying to come up with practical solutions. And in the case of de-extinction, they're using techniques born of the animal kingdom. So I don't think they're playing God at all. I think they're trying to be very conscientious. And they're looking at the profound biodiversity loss that is happening out there and trying to do something about it. I think that's a really positive thing.
That was my conversation with science writer and author Helen Pilcher. She actually wrote a book about de-extinction called Bring Back the King, The New Science of De-Extinction, in which she explores just how far this could go and asks the question, could we bring back the king, as in Elvis?
I think if we did, he probably would still want us not to step on his blue suede shoes.
Probably not.
That's the show's Lauren Gilger. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks.